This is Toxophilia, A The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey fanfic, written by Sospace and read by Rena Jenkins. The story is rated PG-13, contains the pairing Feely-Keely, with additional tags for canon, what canon? Post-Battle of Five Armies, Everyone Lives, and sibling incest. It all starts on the outdoor archery range. They're getting a guided tour, with King Thranduil as their guide, no less. Now that there's once more a king under the mountain, the Elven King has changed his tune, and while he hasn't exactly apologized for locking them all in his cells for weeks on end, he's at least extended the hand of friendship. The invitation arrived at Erebor a month ago, and Thorin, with much cajoling from the erstwhile burglar, finally assented to send his sister sons on a royal visit to the Elven Kingdom. Only once he'd informed Thranduil somewhat rudely that if his nephews ended up in the cells again, it would mean war. Thranduil, however, has been positively welcoming. They were feasted the night they arrived, given the best ambassador suites in the palace. Two adjoining rooms, not that the smaller has been used at all. And today, they're keeping pace with the king as he shows off his domain. Keely would never let it slip to his uncle, but he is impressed. They didn't get to see much of the Elven Palace on their last trip, and, while no Erebor, it is beautiful. Airy and light, full of the sound of lutes and harps. This trip might be notionally a diplomatic chore, but he is quite enjoying himself, and Feely is no different. His brother hasn't said anything aside from the occasional critique of the architecture. Apparently he's not a fan of fluted columns. But from time to time there's this little smile that twitches his lips, satisfied and content. In the Battle of Five Armies, Feely nearly died. He took a poisoned orc spear to the leg, and he sweated and groaned with fever for 5 days before Dori could say for sure that he'd make it. Those were the worst 5 days of Keely's life. It's so good to see him smile again. And this, Thranduil says, is where we train our finest archers. As I'm sure you know, we are famed for our skill with the bow. In fact, my own son, Legolas, is even counted as one of the finest bowmen in Middle-earth. The Elven King preens a little, and Keely exchanges an amused look with his brother. But when he looks out at the range, half listening to Thranduil go on and on about his marvelous offspring, he leaves Feely to the nodding politely. He's got quite good at it recently, being the heir to the mountain and all that. He's almost surprised to find that the Elven King's boasting seems to be somewhat true. The targets at the far end are peppered with bullseyes, and as he's watching, a slender she-elf sends a shaft lancing down the range, to sink deep into the end of the shaft her companion just made. Despite himself, Keely is impressed. He couldn't make that shot, even with the bow the Elven King took from him so long ago. Thranduil might have returned glamdring with all due respect, but a single lowly dwarven bow? Hardly important enough. And this girl, well, she might be an elf, but she's talented. He can respect that. Thariel, Thranduil calls, and the she-elf looks over, dark hair plaited back behind her ears. She slings her bow over her shoulder and pads over, leaving no footprints in the grass, and studies Keely and his brother with interest. There's an oddly intrigued look in her eyes. Thranduil touches her on the arm, says, "Unfortunately, my son couldn't be here today. But Thariel taught him everything he knows. Thariel, these are our honored guests, Thorin Oakenshield's sister sons." Keely can't quite stop himself. He knows how it feels to spend hours on the range, knocking arrow after arrow and never tiring of it. "My lady," he says, "I confess I saw you practicing just now. I must say you have quite a talent." She looks at him keenly. Her dark eyes are bright and intense. "Thank you," she says, I've worked hard for it. She pauses and says, Keely, isn't it? Do you shoot? Keely is suddenly aware that Feely has come very close to his side. He's not entirely sure why. I'm considered skilled among my people, he replies politely. But I'm sure I'm not a patch on any of you. Thranduil smiles happily, but Taria says, I'm sure you have plenty to offer, friend Keely. I invite you to join us tomorrow. It's not often we have dwarves in our midst. I'd be interested to see your technique. Keely can't see his brother's face, and he's pretty sure that if he could, it'd be blankly polite. But he can tell that Feely is seething. What he can't quite understand, though, is why. I'd be honored, he answers. Thoria's eyes are smiling. I look forward to it, she answers, and with a nod to Feely, she turns back to the range. Her partner is waiting for her, and they take up their practice as if nothing had happened to interrupt. My lord Thranduil, Feely says suddenly, would it be all right if we retired for a while until dinner? We're still weary from our journey and wouldn't want to disappoint tonight. Of course, Thranduil says, and staples his fingers together. Until later. Feely smiles once more, and then he grips Keely's arm tight and drags him away, albeit subtler than Keely would have ever managed. But his grip is like iron. Feely, Keely whispers, what are you doing? Feely shoots him a look. What am I doing? He asks, incredulous. What are you doing? Keely is getting the feeling that this isn't going to be a corridor-appropriate conversation. Luckily, their rooms aren't far away, and just as they round the corner to the corridor, he announces, Okay, I'm confused. The moment they're through the door, Feely rounds on him. What was that? Keely is still confused. What was what?
Oh, Taria, Feely simpers. You're so talented.
Keely flushes. He really hopes he didn't sound like that. I was being polite, he says, defensively. You know, diplomatic. I don't particularly want to get reacquainted with Thranduil's cells, do you? And I really don't want to start another war. We've had enough of those recently, don't you think? He doesn't mean to, but something almost like anger slips into his voice. Something that whispers, I watched you almost die, and I can't do that again. Feely, however, doesn't relent. You were flirting. You may not have noticed it, but I'm pretty sure Thranduil did. If he tries to arrange a marriage between you and some Nancy elf, then at least it'll be Uncle causing the international incident, not us. Keely interrupts. He doesn't understand why this has got his brothers so worked up. Feely, he says, softer, and takes a step forward. What's going on? Talk to me. A muscle ticks in Feely's jaw. And how is Keely only just noticing how tight his shoulders are? He reaches out, takes his brother's hand. Feely's fingers clench around his almost automatically, and then Feely says, We're brothers, Keely, and one day I'll be king under the mountain. Our people will rely on me, not Thorin, not anymore. And what happens then? What happens when the other peoples of this world don't like us? Our relationship? Keely ghosts his palm across his brother's cheek, feels his heart hurt. Feely has always been so noble. He doesn't let himself think about the truth in those words. The truth he's worried about himself in the dark hours of the night, when he hears nothing but Feely's breathing, feels nothing but the warmth of his skin. Then we hole up in the mountain with all our money and power, he says with a quiet smile. And we wait until they come begging for our friendship. Because they will. He pauses, holds Vili's gaze. And there's no way I'm going to run off with some elf maiden. He tugs lightly at the braids in his brother's mustache. There's hardly anything to hold on to. Vili watches him for a moment, and finally says, If she touches you, I'll feed her to those damn spiders. And I'll help you, Keely answers, and tugs Vili forward, kisses him firmly. Vili's hands tug at his hair, hold him close, and amused, Keely murmurs between his lips, And I thought I was the possessive one. Vili mutters something that Keely thinks might be along the lines of shut up and get your trousers off. He can't be sure. But he takes the initiative anyway, grabbing playfully at his brother's backside and shoving him back toward the bed. Too wide for a single elf, but perfectly sized for two dwarves. Keely doesn't think about how they almost lost each other, how they could lose each other still. He sucks a bruise onto his brother's neck, feels Feely's hands tug at his hair. Perhaps unsurprisingly, they're late for the banquet thrown in their honor. Thranduil doesn't seem to mind, though, and before long the party gets started and the elven wine starts flowing. It doesn't take long for Keely's head to become thoroughly woozy. He takes another mouthful, brandishes his cup in his brother's direction. This is strong stuff, he exclaims, and only just doesn't slur. Feely's smile is more than a little vacant, and his only answer is to settle deeper into his cups. The tables are piled high with food, salad and meat, pies and fancies. Thranduil seems to be eating most of it. There are pipers and harpists, fiddlers and singers, and elven dancers glide gracefully in intricate patterns around the high table. Keely watches, mesmerized. He can't say he prefers all this elegance to the raucous stamping festivities they held for 40 days in Erebor once the mountain was retaken. And Keely was well enough to talk and smile and, live. But there's a certain beauty to it that he can't deny. He and his brother, they're not entirely creatures of the earth, not as much as their uncle is. They were raised on the run in the towns of men, under the wheeling stars. And while the gleam of gold stirs Keely's heart, he still has a soft spot for the rustle of leaves in the dawn light, the spring of grass underfoot, the blue sky reflected in his brother's eyes. She's looking at you again. Feely's hand lands heavily on his arm, and he's glaring so unsubtly Keely wants to groan. Who? Keely asks, and follows his brother's gaze. Because Tauriel is one of the dancers, and her eyes are dark and intense and, fixed on him. When she sees him looking, she smiles a smile Keely only ever wants to see on his brother's lips, and his heart sinks a little. Stupid archery, he thinks, and squeezes Feely's knee under the table. Remember, brother, he says, voice a little sing-song from the alcohol. Diplomacy. Feely's eyes are very solemn and very drunk. Remember, brother, he echoes. Spiders. When the party is over, most of the elves either staggering back to their homes or, in certain cases, curling up in a drunken stupor to sleep under the table. Thranduil may or may not be in the latter category. Keely ends up practically carrying his brother back to their rooms. Feely is a handsy drunk, grabbing at Keely's hair and winding his fingers into the brocade down the front of his tunic. And it's all Keely can do to not just give up and have his way with his brother in the corridor. He's not exactly sober himself, after all. But he thinks about, and one day I'll be king under the mountain, and gets them back to their rooms. Keely, Feely murmurs. Keely, Keely. What? Keely answers, exasperated. his suddenly childlike older brother is pointing at the far side of their room.
What are those?
Keeley looks and frowns. He wishes he hadn't had that last cup of wine.
Those,
he answers,
are flowers. Why are there flowers here?
Keeley frowns.
Did you pick them?
Keeley scoffs.
No. Did I pick them?
Keeley blinks.
I don't think so,
he answers.
Someone else must have left them, one of the elves. A gift, I suppose.
Why would you give flowers as a gift? Billy asks, and suddenly they're stumbling across the room together. Won't they die soon? They don't have any earth. Do you think they eat them? He wrinkles his nose, and Keeley abruptly wants to do nothing but kiss him. They're in private now, and there's no reason for him not to. The sex is messy and sloppy, full of drunken laughter and too loud groans. Keeley's fairly sure the sheets are ruined. One of them has a rather large hole in the middle. And they sleep long into the morning. Keeley curled around his brother with no intention of ever letting him go. When they get up slowly. Keeley is more than a little worse for wear, and he lets Keeley clean him with a semi-comatose look in his eyes. Keeley finds this intensely amusing, and spends at least half an hour flicking water in Keeley's face before his brother finally wakes up. That slows things down again. They rip another bedsheet, and then they have to wash all over again. Eventually, when they're clean and half-dressed, Keeley says,
So, you're off to play with Toriel's bow. I bet she left those damn flowers.
Keeley shoots him a look, pulls his trousers on. Don't start this again, he says.
Diplomacy. I can look after myself, you know that.
He pauses, grins.
I'm more worried about you, to be honest. Going around the forges with Thranduil? All that hammering?
Keeley groans quietly.
I've been trying to forget about it,
he replies.
My head. When did I ever think this was going to be a good idea?
Last night, Keeley replies immediately and reaches for his shirt. When you started boasting to Thranduil about Erebor's forges, that was never going to end well.
Keeley frowns. I hate you.
Keeley smiles.
I love you,
he answers, and ties off his boots with a flourish. He gets to his feet, and suddenly Keeley is close, too close, hands winding in his jacket and thigh pushed between his knees. He kisses him, hard and sharp and almost aggressive, and when his brother breaks away, leaving Keeley almost panting, all Keeley says is,
Spiders, I mean it.
Keeley does nothing but laugh. The archery range is quiet today, only a handful of elves practicing their trade, and all looking more than a little worse for wear.
Keeley isn't the only one with a hangover,
Keeley thinks with a smile. He folds his arms, thinks about Keeley's face, lips gaped in ecstasy and joy, remembers when he was ashen and quiet and so still he looked already dead. Keeley, Taria says, and a smile that's nothing more than happy splits her lips. I'm glad you remembered. Keeley forces a smile.
Of course, my lady,
he replies. Although your people's wine certainly did its best to make me forget. She laughs, high and bell-like. Keeley thinks of his brother's low rumble, and then she's saying, I hope you don't mind, but I brought someone else along. He wanted to meet you. This is Prince Legolas. The elf at her side is tall and blonde, delicate coronet perched lopsidedly on his head, and he's smiling broadly. Keely is always a little suspicious of smiling elves. They're inevitably up to something. Thranduil always smiled. Keely smiles politely. I'm honored. Likewise, Legolas answers, and he pauses for a moment, finally says, You were here before, correct? One of the party my father detained? Keely is surprised. Thranduil has so far avoided the topic like the plague. Understandable, considering Thorin's somewhat bellicose outlook on the whole situation. I was, he answers lightly. And I'm pleased to see your father's hospitality has somewhat improved. Megalus laughs.
True,
he answers, and says, Tariel mentioned you were an archer. As far as I remember, there was only one bow the guards took from your uncle's party. I believe this is yours. And the elf prince suddenly produces a dwarven bow out of nowhere, a bow that's dark and well-worn, and has Keely's name etched in Khuzdal runes in the hand grip. Think of it as starting over, Legolas continues. A new relationship between our people. For a moment, Keely forgets to breathe. That bow was a gift, given to him by his uncle on the day he finally came of age, and without it, Keely always felt like something was missing. No other bow fits his hand quite so well. No other bow is just the perfect weight. And he's reaching out and almost grabbing it out of the elf prince's hands, running his fingertips over the dark-stained wood, plucking the bowstring, feeling its cool weight in his hands. I took the liberty of restringing it myself, Legolas says. I hope you don't mind. The old one hadn't coped well with our holes. And all Keely can say is, Thank you. Thank you. It suits you, Tariel says, and her voice is soft. There's no lust in her eyes, no wanton need, none of the things Feely fears, because in that moment she's just another archer who understands that this bow was more than just a weapon to him, more than just a tool. It completes him as much as his brother does. Keely feels his heart race, and yes, he remembers, and one day I'll be king under the mountain. But he starts to let himself hope that everything might be more than okay. Legolas gestures towards the range. Shall we? As Keely had already sort of guessed, the two elves are a league ahead of him. He doesn't mind, though, because they're fascinated by the way he handles his bow and the way he caresses the fletching. And, in turn, he learns from them, from their accuracy and patience and their breathing. Dwarves aren't ones for patience, but when he watches Tariel's stillness before she lets fly, he thinks it might be the most magical thing he's seen in a long time. And to his surprise, she's nothing but courteous. She touches his hand occasionally as he prepares to shoot, but the touch is an investigation, not a caress, and when she watches him with those dark, intent eyes, he can't help but feel that all she's seeing is the way his body curves around the bow. The three of them are just archers now, nothing more, nothing less. Not dwarves and elves, male and female, tall and small. It's so peaceful, even though it's all framed by a weapon of war. Before Keely really knows what's happening, the skies are growing dim, and the shadows are lengthening. He's been here all day. He's vaguely aware that Feely is probably worrying, probably pacing their rooms and coming up with all sorts of elaborate solutions to the explicit scenarios running through his head, most of them involving spiders in some way, shape, or form. But he's not worried. If he's pissed, he'll make it up to him. If he's not, he'll make it up to him anyway. Keely smiles. It's been a good day. Tariel puts away her bow, long, slender fingers caressing its curve. She says, I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay with us, Keely. I won't forget. And she leans down, presses a soft, affectionate kiss to his forehead, and then she's gone, making nary a sound as she slips back inside. Legolas is smiling, bow still in hand. There's a brightness in his eyes that Keely is almost awed by, and he says, "She meant no offense by her actions." Keely feels his cheeks flush, and he ducks his head, strokes his fingertips along the bow he'd thought he'd never hold again. "You must understand," Legolas continues. "Complimenting someone on their skill with a bow is forward among our people. She thought you were courting her." He laughed softly. "My father was ready to propose a marriage. She's well respected in the Greenwood." Keely indulges in imagining Thorin's apoplexy for a moment, and then he says, "I didn't realize. I was just trying to be polite." "Which I realized," Legolas says, "when I saw how you were with your brother last night." And Keely feels his heart skip a beat. He remembers, "And one day I'll be king under the mountain." And all he can think is, "Please, not this day." But the elf prince is smiling. "Even Tariel couldn't challenge a love like that," he says, and there's sunlight in his voice. "She realized as soon as I pointed it out. And she would be telling you this herself, but she was, to be honest, too embarrassed." There's a faint pinkness to his cheeks. "As you observed, our hospitality towards your people hasn't always been the best. We're trying to rectify that, not make things worse." Keely thinks, "I love you, brother." He rubs the wood of his bow with an absent touch, warm beneath his fingers, and he says, "I think you're succeeding." Legolas' smile is warm and slanted. "It would be an honor for you to train with us after your visit has ended," he says. "You can learn from us, and I think we could learn from you." Keely thinks about the tenderness in Tariel's fingers as she knocked arrows to her bow, the grace of their arc through the still air. "I'd be proud to," he answers, and his voice is thick with honesty and friendship. And Legolas' eyes are smiling. When Keely gets back to their rooms, it's dark outside, and Feely is dozing. For a moment, Keely just stands in the doorway and watches the way moonlight slants across his cheeks. And then he pads forward, lets the door close softly behind him. His bow is a perfect weight in his hand, and Feely wakes at the sound of his footsteps. "Hey," his brother says. "Where have you been? It's been hours." He pauses, winces. "The forges were very loud." Keely sits down on the bed beside his brother, shows him his bow. He can't stop smiling. "They returned it to me," he says. "I thought I'd never see it again. And Thranduil's son thought to find it and give it back to me. His son." Feely props himself up on his elbows, leans his cheek against Keely's shoulder. He doesn't speak. "And Tariel," Keely says, "the moment she found out about us." Feely stiffens. "You told her?" he interrupts. Keely smooths golden hair away from his brother's forehead, presses his fingers to his lips. "The elf prince guessed," he explains. "Legolas. And he didn't mind at all. He seemed, I don't know, happy, pleased for us." His fingers flex around his bow. Feely reaches up, brushes his touch across Keely's stubble. His eyes are shadowed but bright, and he just says, "I love you." And Keely thinks about elves and dwarves, archers and kings, and the way his heart soars every time he sees his brother's smile. So vibrant and so alive.
I love you too,
he answers, and puts his bow aside. The end.